on 17th of December 1979 all confirm the terrorist nature of these attacks. Very soon, 104 members of the MKO, the Mujahideen Khalq organization, will be tried for their acts of terrorism in absentia in a special court of law in Tehran. Both the United States of America and the Zionist regime of Israel have provided all sorts of weaponry and training, communications equipment, and logistical support to the MKO terrorists, who serve America and Israel's interests in the region and do their bidding. The terrorizing of Iran's nuclear scientists is just one example of such activities carried out by the MKO, the Mujahideen Khalq organization. Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, Dr. Majid Shahriari, Dr. Masood Ali Mohammadi, Dariush Rezai Nejad, Mustafa Ahmadi Roshan, and Reza Qashqai were just some of Iran's nuclear scientists and engineers who were all assassinated in cowardly attacks by the MKO mercenaries working for the Israeli regime's intelligence agencies. Major General Haj Qasem Soleimani was assassinated in a US drone strike at Baghdad International Airport in the early hours of the morning of the 3rd of January 2020. He was accompanied by Abu Mahdi al-Muhandes, one of leaders of Iraq's Hashd al-Shaabi, and other senior officials. It's quite clear that these acts of terrorism have not only failed to intimidate the Iranian people, but they have made them more determined to stand by the Islamic Revolution and its ideals and objectives.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The United States in yet another example of racial discrimination. On Saturday, a white man, later identified as 21-year-old Ryan Christopher Perlmutter, went on a shooting rampage, killing three people in the U.S. city of Jacksonville, Florida. Authorities said all the three victims were black, calling the incident racially motivated.
Plainly put, this shooting was racially motivated, and he hated black people. He wanted to kill niggers. That's the one and only time I'll use that word.
The Jacksonville sheriff said the gunman had authored several manifestos for media, his parents, and law enforcement, detailing his hatred for black people. The sheriff said he also left a will and a suicide note that were retrieved by his father. Police also said the guns used in Jacksonville's shooting were obtained legally.
They were 100% legal, and as I stand here with you today, they were legally possessed. There was nothing indicating, again, like I said, it appears that the dealers that sold those guns to him did it legally. They did what they were supposed to have done.
The Saturday shooting in Jacksonville drew a slew of reactions.
This is a community that has suffered again and again. So many times, this is where we end up. And there were so many people out today, obviously grieving, upset. It's just something that should not and must not continue to happen in our community. It's too often the same folks. We must do everything that we can. We must do everything that we can to dissuade this type of hate.
In his statement, U.S. President Joe Biden said we must refuse to live in a country where black families going to the store or black students going to school live in fear of being gunned down because of the color of their skin. Attorney General Merrick Garland said the Justice Department is investigating the shooting as a hate crime, calling the incident an act of racially motivated violent extremism. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis called Jacksonville shooter's comeback.
Florida, the state, and its people condemn the horrific racially motivated murders perpetrated by a deranged scumbag in Jacksonville at the Dollar General store. Perpetrating violence of this kind is unacceptable, and targeting people due to their race has no place in the state of Florida.
The Jacksonville shooting coincides with a rally held in the U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C., to mark the 60th anniversary of a march at which late prominent civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr. gave a galvanizing speech about justice and equality. Thousands of people gathered at the Lincoln Memorial to advocate for racial equality. Speakers at the rally strongly condemned gun violence against black individuals as the crowd chanted Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter!
The protesters stressed that racism is becoming more prevalent in the American society. They highlighted the need for more efforts to eliminate racial discrimination. The 1963 march was a pivotal event in the U.S. civil rights movement at which Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech. The march brought more than 250,000 people to the nation's capital to push for an end to discrimination. Yet 60 years on, brutality against black people is happening at record numbers.
Because I'm very concerned about the direction our country is going in. And it is because instead of moving forward, it feels as if we're moving backward.
Just to make that evident, 21 African Americans were killed by U.S. law enforcement officers only in January this year. That already makes the year one of the deadliest ever so far for the African American community in the U.S. That includes the tragic death of Keenan Darden Anderson, who was tased by police officers in Los Angeles following a car accident. But that's only one incident of brutality and racial discrimination against blacks. The United States has a long history of such bias against the people of color. One major example was the brutal killing of a 46-year-old black man named George Floyd, who died after a white police officer pressed on his neck for more than 9 minutes during an arrest in May 2020 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The death of the handcuffed black man triggered months of mass protests, not only in cities across the U.S., but also other parts of the world. With many arguing that America was built on slavery, it is not erroneous to claim that racial profiling against African Americans and other people of color is deeply rooted in American culture. Maybe that's why it is early to think that putting an end to prejudice and racism in the U.S. does not seem to be happening anytime soon. Tensions between Niamey and Paris are running high as Niger's military leaders have given the French ambassadors 48 hours to leave the country. In a statement, Niger's foreign ministry said the decision to expel the French ambassador was taken partly due to their refusal to respond to an invitation to a meeting with Niger's Minister of Foreign Affairs. The statement added that actions by the French government have been contrary to the interests of the African nation. This prompted a response from France. Paris dismissed the ultimatum, saying Niger's junta have no authority to ask its ambassador to leave. The ultimatum was widely supported by Niger's public. Hundreds of protesters gathered in front of the French military base in Niamey on Friday, calling for the departure of foreign troops.
It's all part of the general mobilization we have here, is to demand the departure of these invading forces, this occupying force, the French force here at Niamey Air Base. That's why we want to come to the door of this base to ask them to leave our country from here. We don't need this occupying force. We don't want them on our land.
The latest development in Niger comes amid a series of anti-French demonstrations in the African country after the army overthrew President Mohamed Bazoum in July. The military leaders in Niamey accused former colonial power France of seeking to use force in order to reinstate the ousted president. They also said the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is an organization in the pocket of France. This is because ECOWAS has imposed tough economic sanctions on Niger following the coup and has threatened the country with military intervention.
The region is employing other elements of its instruments and engaging with the military authorities. We are hopeful that these diplomatic efforts will yield the desired outcome and make it unnecessary for the deployment of the force. Nonetheless, preparations continue towards making the force ready for deployment.
The anger and resentment against ECOWAS and its threats to use military force against junta leaders in Niger comes as many across the Sahelian nation blame France for pushing the West African bloc to use military force in Niger. But the question indeed is that where is all that hatred against France coming from? Over the years, Niger has faced growing insecurity amid the worsening effects of political instability and armed insurgencies. At the same time, the West African nation, a resource-rich country of 26 million, is according to UN figures considered one of the poorest nations on Earth. Given that the French have been playing a crucial role in Niger, both politically and economically, the general public there points its finger at Paris to be the cause of all those grievances. But Niger is not the only country facing growing anti-French sentiment. The hatred against France has been a common feeling amongst many African countries, given that the military takeover in Niger is the sixth in the Sahel region in less than 3 years, coming after Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Mali. The toppling of President Bazoum has, in a way, created shockwaves not only across the sub-region, but reverberated across Europe and the United States. That's mainly due to the fact that Niger is home to strategic mineral reserves such as uranium, gold, and crude oil, among others. France holds mineral rights for the mining of uranium, which powers its nuclear power plant. This has made Paris highly depend on Niger's uranium mines. But being aware of the strategic importance of uranium to France's energy needs, Niger military leaders have already announced that they will suspend the export of uranium and gold to France and the US. The move is widely seen by many across Niger as a way to cut the hands of powers that have long been plundering the country's resources. Knowing that the same fate will be waiting for many across the Sahelian countries, African people are waking up to the fact that Western powers, namely France and the United States, have been maintaining their presence in their countries merely to plunder their resources. That's maybe the reason for Nigerians and other West African countries to come to the fact that the era of colonialism is over and they're the ones who should put an end to decades of West occupation and economic exploitation of their countries.
In an interview, far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir said that the right to life and movement for settlers in illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank trumped the right to movement for Palestinians. Palestinians have long railed against travel restrictions, including checkpoints imposed on them by Israel in the occupied West Bank. Ben-Gvir, who lives in the Jewish settlement of Kiryat Arba, near the flashpoint West Bank city of Al-Khalil, said in the interview the curbs were needed to protect his family's security.
My right, my wife's right, my children's right to move on the roads of Judea and Samaria are more important than the right of movement for Arabs. This is the truth. My right to life tops their right to movement.
The international community, along with the Palestinians, consider settlement construction illegal. More than 700,000 Israelis live in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds. Following Ben-Gvir's comments, the Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs condemned his remarks as racist and heinous and said it only confirms Israel's apartheid regime of Jewish supremacy. Remarks by Ben-Gvir, who has a history of anti-Arab incitement and has long taken a hardline approach to the Palestinians, infuriated some legislators in the Israeli parliament. Arab lawmaker Ahmad Tibi strongly denounced Ben-Gvir, who oversees the police, for his provocative comments.
For the first time, an Israeli minister admits on air that Israel enforces an apartheid regime based on Jewish supremacy.
Karine El-Harar, a lawmaker from the opposition and a former minister, also reacted to Ben-Gvir's provocative remarks, blasting him as the authentic representative of the most racist cabinet Israel has ever had. The Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court defines apartheid, which is a direct symptom of military occupation, as a crime against humanity, characterized by the commission of inhumane acts such as unlawful killing, torture, and forcible transfer, which are committed to maintain an institutionalized regime of systematic oppression and domination by one racial group over another. Major human rights groups and UN officials have accused Tel Aviv of perpetuating such a system against Palestinians on top of the military occupation of their land and a decades-long campaign of genocide. Ben-Gvir, a member of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right coalition, has been convicted in the past of inciting racism and of supporting a terrorist organization. More recently, Ben-Gvir has said Israel must kill thousands of Palestinians, called for flattening buildings in the occupied West Bank, and has led multiple raids into Al-Aqsa Mosque. The West Bank has been rocked by violence since early last year, especially with repeated deadly raids by the Israeli army. Israeli forces launch raids on various cities of the West Bank almost on a daily basis under the pretext of detaining what the regime calls wanted Palestinians. The raids usually lead to violent confrontations with residents. Settler attacks against Palestinians and their property are also a regular occurrence. Palestinians in Al-Khalil are particularly vulnerable to settler violence as well as Israeli surveillance. A former Israeli army general has blamed the rising wave of violence in the occupied West Bank on settlers who, as he described, go very wild in terms of provoking the local population, doing terrible acts of vandalism, sometimes terrorism against Palestinian families. The former head of the Israeli Army's Operations Directorate, Israel Ziv, said Israeli settlers are definitely encouraged by what they think is the policy of the Israeli cabinet and the coalition today. The development came after a wave of recent resistance operations in the occupied West Bank. Against the decades-long occupation by the regime, more than 200 Palestinians have been killed this year in the occupied Palestinian territories in Gaza, the highest number of fatalities since 2005. The majority of these fatalities have been recorded in the West Bank. At least 30 people have also been killed in Palestinian retaliatory attacks against Israeli settlers during that time.
Iran has been invited to become a member of the BRICS group of emerging economies, whose leaders have attended a summit in Johannesburg, South Africa, to discuss the bloc's expansion. The South African President Cyril Ramaphosa announced on Thursday that the BRICS member states agreed to admit Iran to the bloc.
We have consensus on the first phase of this expansion process, and other phases will follow. We have decided to invite the Argentine Republic, the Arab Republic of Egypt, the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia, the Islamic Republic of Iran, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates to become full members of BRICS. The membership will take effect from the 1st of January 2024.
The five current member states have reached a consensus on the first phase of this expansion process. Reacting to the news, Mohammad Jamshidi, the Iranian president's deputy chief of staff for political affairs, said Iran's membership in BRICS is a historical development and a strategic success for the foreign policy of the Islamic Republic. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said Tehran seeks to promote cooperation with the member states of the BRICS group of emerging economies. He also noted that Iran, in its foreign policy, has put the promotion of relations with all independent countries in the world on its agenda.
And the benefits of Iran's membership to BRICS is going to make history and open a new chapter and a stronger step towards justice, fairness, ethics, and sustainable and lasting peace on the international stage.
The Chinese President Xi Jinping has said the expansion of BRICS will inject new impetus to the group's cooperation mechanism. This expansion has reflected BRICS' determination for unity and cooperation. He said this membership expansion is historic. The expansion is also a new starting point for BRICS cooperation. It will bring new vigor to the BRICS cooperation mechanism and further strengthen the force for world peace and development. Russia has also welcomed Iran's application and the group's expansion to include international powerhouses. Meanwhile, South Africa's foreign minister has said that leaders of the BRICS bloc have agreed on mechanisms for considering new members, giving dozens of interested nations a path into the organization. The inclusion of Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Iran, and Egypt marks the first MENA representation in the group, and the inclusion of Argentina was championed by member Brazil. The expansion of the group is part of its plan to build dominance and to reshape global governance into a multipolar world order.
Excellencies, we are moving towards a multipolar world, and that is a positive thing. But multipolarity in itself is not enough to guarantee a peaceful or just global community. To be a factor of peace, equity, and justice in international relations, multipolarity must be supported by strong and effective multilateral institutions.
UAE President Mohammed bin Zayed said he appreciated the inclusion of his country as a new member of the important group. We respect the vision of BRICS leadership and appreciate the inclusion of the UAE as a member to this important group. We look forward to a continued commitment of cooperation for the prosperity, dignity, and benefit of all nations and people around the world. The bloc's expansion raises the question of potential de-dollarization, a process by which members would gradually switch to using currencies other than the U.S. dollar to conduct trade. The expansion also takes place at a time when some BRICS members, namely Russia and China, are locked into rising tensions with the West. Experts believe that choosing to include countries like Iran, have opted to choose a foreign policy independent of the West, could swing the group further toward becoming an anti-Western bloc. BRICS held its first summit in 2009 with four members and then added South Africa the following year. It launched its new development bank in 2015. More than 40 countries have expressed interest in joining BRICS, and 23 formally applied to join the club, which already represented a quarter of the global economy and 40% of the world's population.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفران يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear Muslim brothers and sisters actually, Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Karim, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Here we are again, alhamdulillah, with Brother Ali Nasir, Hussein, Hassan, and Fawad Haider. I really welcome you all. Assalamu alaikum, jami'a. How are you? Fine. Everybody's fine?
Yes.
Great. Inshallah, today we will talk about an important thing, an important subject, on verses 138 and 139 of Surah An-Nisa. In these two verses, Allah Almighty mentions important points. Let's go, inshallah, and learn them. First, we will listen to the recitation. Everybody ready?
Yes.
Let's go.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Bashir al Munafiqeen bi anna lahum adhaban aleema. الذين يتخذون الكافرين أولياء من دون المؤمنين أيبتغون عندهم العزة فإن العزة لله جميعا.
So Allah Almighty says in Ayah 138 and 139 of Surah An-Nisa, بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم بَشِّرِ الْمُنَافِقِينَ بِأَنَّ لَهُمْ عَذَابًا أَلِيمًا. O Prophet, inform or give the news to the hypocrites, munafiq. Okay, somebody who is two-faced. Okay, with believers, shows himself as a believer. With non-believers, he is non-believer. All right?
Yes.
He also comes to masjid, okay? He comes to masjid and shows off himself, praying a lot, a very, very good prayer. But when he goes out of the masjid, he is the same person. The same potage as the same bowl, okay? He is the same person who was plotting against Muslims, who was doing haram things. He's the same person. He's called munafiq. Why? Because he is not in one of the sides. He's not either on the right side or on the left side. مُذَبْذَبِينَ بَيْنَ ذَلِكَ. Allah Almighty says he's here, he's nor there or here, okay? He's in between. So these kind of people are called munafiq. Those people are called hypocrites or yes. Munafiqin. Allah Almighty tells the Prophet, okay, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, that inform the hypocrites بِأَنَّ لَهُمْ عَذَابًا أَلِيمًا, that there is a painful punishment for them. Alright. In the next ayah, Allah Almighty says, who are those hypocrites? Some of the characteristics of these people. Look. الَّذِينَ مُنَافِقِينَ are those people. يَتَّخِذُونَ الْكَافِرِينَ أَوْلِيَاءَ, those who take the faithless for allies. مِن دُونِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ, instead of the faithful. They claim that they are believers. Hey man, if you are a believer, what are you doing with non-believer? Alright? If you are with Imam Hussein, if you love Imam Hussein, what are you doing in Yazid's army? Huh? If you are a follower of Imam Ali alayhi salam, a follower of the Prophet, what are you doing with Muawiyah? What are you doing with Yazid? What are you doing with the other enemies of Islam? What's going on with you? Okay? الَّذِينَ يَتَّخِذُونَ الْكَافِرِينَ أَوْلِيَا, they take kuffar, the non-believers, as their friends, as their allies. Okay? For example, they come and they attend the meetings of Muslims, okay, the believers. But after the meeting is ended, they go and they are having their fun with other people, with non-Muslims, with kuffar. Munafiqin are like this. If you want to know who is a munafiq, this is the characteristic of a munafiq. Okay? For example, they are saying a lot of, for example, sentences, announcements, okay, that we follow the religion, we follow the government, Islamic government, from blah, 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 blah. But in fact, they're not doing. This is something apparently they do, okay? In reality, they're plotting a lot of things. This is munafiq. And they are seeking honor. They are seeking their secular advantages, Allah Almighty says. Okay. أَيَبْتَغُونَ عِنْدَهُمُ الْعِزَّةِ Allah Almighty is raising a question. Do these munafiq people seek honor with these non-believers? They think that these disbelievers, non-believers, this kuffar will bring for them honor, will give them pride, will give them benefit, huh? Will give them strength, power. Allah Almighty says, no. فَإِنَّ الْعِزَّةَ لِلَّهِ جَمِيعًا If so, if they are looking for honor, to get honor from the non-believers, okay? Come on. Indeed, all honor belongs to Allah Almighty. Okay? So we should be really careful. Alhamdulillah, we are not such kind of people, but we really have to be careful, okay? So, guys, that's it. I hope, inshallah, we have learned something from this ayah, from this two verses. No questions?
No.
No questions? If you are ready to go to the Tajweed rules, and if our brothers and sisters are ready, let's recite a salawat and then go. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil wa ajil.
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's Recite the Quran.
So the second part of our class is, of course, the Tajweed rules and the recitation. بشر المنافقين بشر is the word is command, it's a command, فعل الأمر it's called. So بشر, it ends with ساكن, را has a سكون, it has a كسرة down there, okay, but in reality it doesn't have a كسرة. بشر, okay, but since the next word starts with ساكن, the letter لام is ساكن, حمزة الوصل is used there as well because of that sakin letter. So two sakin letters are there. The meeting of two sakin letters. Hurrik will kasra. They will have a kasra. The first one will have a kasra. Bashir ril munafiqeen. One of the rules is this, which is applied here. Bashiril munafiqeen bi an. Yeah? What do you see? What do you say this? What? بأن نون مشدد. Could you say the rule?
You stretch the sound. Produce a nasal sound.
All right, that's good. بأن, we don't say بأن, بأنهم, بأن لهم, okay, no. بأن لهم عذابا أليما, عذابا تنوين. Ali Nasir, you tell us. Tanween plus Hamza. Do we change, do we merge the tanween, or we skip it, or we don't bring any changes?
No change.
No changes.
Yeah.
عَذَابًا أَلِيمًا. Normally read it. Good job. So I'll read it. You repeat after me. بِسْمِ اللَّهِ الرَّحْمَنِ الرَّحِيمِ
بِسْمِ اللَّهِ الرَّحْمَنِ الرَّحِيمِ
بشر المنافقين بأن لهم عذابا أليما
بشر المنافقين بأن لهم عذابا أليما
أحسنتم الذين you see that if the word starts with حمزة الوصل you put a فتح on the top الذين not إلذين not أولذين الذين It starts with Hamzatul Wasl and also it has Lam al-Ta'rif. It's a noun. That's why the rule says that way. يَتَّخِذُونَ Pay attention to the letter Dhal. يَتَّخِذُونَ الْكَافِرِينَ You ignore Hamzatul Wasl, you join Nun to the Lam. نَالْكَافِرِينَ أَوْلِيَاءَ The mad is wajib, stretch it. مِن دُونِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ مِن Nun Sakin plus Dal. Hussein, you tell us. What rule is applied here? إخفاء. You hide the sound of no?
Yes.
Good job. Meow. Hiding is like you're trying to pronounce the letter noon, but not completely yet. Your lips go and wants to touch, like your tongue, sorry. Your tongue goes to the articulation point. Mean, but you don't let it go there, okay? Meow. Prevent it. Pull it back. Meow.
Yes.
Pull it back. And produce the sound from, try to produce the sound of noon from your nose, not from your mouth. Meow. Very simple. So, meow, du, nil, huh? Mu'mineen. The letter Jim tells, huh? Hassan, you tell us. The letter Jim there on the top, baby Jim.
It's optional to stop or continue.
Optional to stop or continue. Good job, good job. Ayab ta'guna. Ayab ta'guna. The letter ba has a sukun on the top. Says, huh? You should?
Qalqala.
Apply the rule qalqala. Echo the sound. Bounce the sound, mashallah. Ayab ta'guna. عندهم العز. عندهم the same as ميندون. Ikhfa, you hide the sound. فَإِنَّ الْعِزَّةَ لِلَّهِ جَمِيعًا changes to جَمِيعًا. Ready to repeat after me?
Yes.
الَّذِينَ يَتَّخِذُونَ الْكَافِرِينَ أَوْلِيَاءَ مِنْ دُونِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ
الَّذِينَ يَتَّخِذُونَ الْكَافِرِينَ أَوْلِيَاءَ مِنْ دُونِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ
مِنْ دُونِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ مِنْ right? Apply it with عندهم, don't forget it.
أَيَبْتَغُونَ عِنْدَهُمُ الْعِزَّةَ فَإِنَّ الْعِزَّةَ لِلَّهِ جَمِيعًا أَيَبْتَغُونَ عِنْدَهُمُ الْعِزَّةَ فَإِنَّ الْعِزَّةَ لِلَّهِ جَمِيعًا
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
Allah bless you inshallah. See you in the next session with the next verses of Surah and Nisa. Stay with IRB English Radio, brothers and sisters. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
In the limelight.
New statistics show that the proportion of cross-border transactions involving the world's second most popular currency fell to 24.4% last month, down by 6.83 percentage points on the previous month. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RIA Novosti, the use of the euro for international settlements dropped to its lowest level on record in July. Statistics show that the proportion of cross-border transactions involving the world's second most popular currency fell to 24.4% last month, down by 6.83 percentage points on the previous month. Cross-border transactions with the Chinese yuan rose to more than 3%, the highest level since the start of 2022. The yuan's share in global trade has been steadily growing in line with Beijing's efforts to internationalize the use of its currency. SWIFT, or the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications, continues to be the major tool for processing global payments. However, in recent years, alternative interbanking messaging systems have appeared. Russia started developing its own national payment system when the U.S. targeted the country with sanctions in 2014. The SPFS ensures the transfer of financial messages between banks both inside and outside the country. Russia's Mir cards entered circulation in December 2015 and are currently used in a number of countries. China also has its own payment system, CIPS, or Cross-Border Interbank Payment System, while India has the SFMS, or Structural Financial Messaging System. Russia and its trade partners have been increasing the use of local currencies in settlements and are working towards establishing a new reserve currency amid Western sanctions on Moscow. According to China Daily, Russia is resolute in its stance on de-dollarization. It has even achieved preliminary results by selling almost all the U.S. Treasury bonds it held, significantly reducing the use of the U.S. dollar in its foreign trade, actively promoting the Russian-coined SPFS system, an alternative to the SWIFT system. Given the long-term colonial influence on its economy, Brazil, too, understands the impact of the dollar hegemony on its economy. That's why President Lula da Silva has been working with other BRICS leaders to decide on a common currency to be used in intra-BRICS trade. Besides, due to historical and practical reasons, South Africa has been advocating the reform of the global financial system and has started settling foreign trade deals in non-dollar currencies. As for India, it places greater emphasis on practical interest in its foreign trade and has been settling some of its trade deals in its own or its trade partners' currency. In fact, India intends to develop the rupee as an international currency and has a clear stance on de-dollarization. China, on the other hand, has been emphasizing currency swaps for years and promoting the use of yuan or its trade partners' currency to settle foreign trade deals, which have been welcomed by many countries. The Atlantic Council also wrote, membership expansion could further weaken the effectiveness of U.S.-led economic sanctions and accelerate the multipolarization of the global monetary order. Several members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries have already said they wish to join the BRICS group, which would increase the shared benefits associated with the use of local currencies for cross-border transactions and could further curtail the volume of global trade conducted in dollars. Following membership expansion, the BRICS group could set in motion its transformation into an even more powerful geopolitical coalition that could accelerate the process of de-dollarization and the transition to a multipolar world.
Our rebels.
We are a history of siege. We are a history of uncertainty. Because we have one common problem. Spain, and we had a previous common problem, UK.
A strip of sea, a strip of land surrounded by water. The last European frontier separating Spain from the United Kingdom. The border is a mere few hundred meters long. It is the shortest border in the world and separates the Spanish city called La Línea de la Concepción from Gibraltar, a British colony. It's the last colony in Europe, as well as the smallest territory among those included in the UN official list of countries to decolonize. Since 1713, Gibraltar has been the center of a diplomatic war which doesn't allow its inhabitants to decide their own future.
The history of Gibraltar really starts with the War of Succession, and in fact, the British and the Dutch arrive to recover Gibraltar for Spain. They're not technically getting it for themselves, but typically of the British and the start of their major colonial expansion. As soon as they got here and they saw the naval strategic position, they basically decided to keep it. And then the history becomes a colonial history. Of course, Spain all the time is trying to recover, but doesn't have the military strength to do that.
It is almost a diplomatic or a political dispute. I would not like to use the word war, but it's a dispute that there is between England and or the United Kingdom, I should say, and Spain over a very small place that is Gibraltar. If one goes to New York, the United Nations headquarters, and looks at the list of colonies, Gibraltar is there. And Gibraltar is in the agenda as an issue to be resolved, as a colony to be decolonized. That doesn't mean we necessarily agree with the United Nations interpretation of Gibraltar's status. The fact that the United Nations considers us to be a colony does not necessarily mean that we agree that we are a colony.
Gibraltar is the gateway between Africa and Europe. It is known as the Rock, and its strategic position is the key issue in the Spanish-British dispute. Provocations and complaints are the ingredients that have caused a political chill that has increased over recent years, involving the citizens of both countries. Spain's strategic weapon is the border, a few hundred meters, with two different sets of armed forces, two flags, and two barriers to get through. Day and night.
that there are about 6,000 Spanish workers who come in, and quite a lot who are not formal workers. They're people who do the garden or they babysit and all that. But it's not a phenomenon that I'm particularly aware of. What I am aware of is that the gaming companies do employ people from all over the world because you have to speak Chinese or Arabic or whatever, and those skills, you don't get them easily locally. So that's who comes in from other countries. But that's really it. You know, that's the biggest impact in terms of work. The problem, I think, for Spanish workers is the tax, the less jobs that there are, the fact that the problems Spain introduced has led to some businesses reducing or closing. Because if tourism is down and shops are getting less clients, the first thing they do is reduce the staff.
The dispute between the United Kingdom and Spain seems endless. Blocks of concrete in the sea have been the answer to the arbitrary use of border controls. Limitations in the use of Spanish workers have been the answer to the accusations of smuggling. The Spanish government accuses Gibraltar of being a tax haven. Gibraltar simply points out its British sovereignty, which is unquestionable. This is a daily, continual duel. There seems to be no solution.
Spain says insistently that, in fact, it says much worse than we are an offshore paradise. It says that we are a bunch of pirates and that everything in Gibraltar is about money laundering and other issues. So there are other countries out there, small countries, large countries, which have a very different finance system to the one we have, and they are also prospering very well because they don't have to worry like we do. In spite of being very small and in spite of having limited resources, we comply with every single European directive. We have transposed into our legislation every single European directive. The OECD, the organization that looks into these things, having given Gibraltar a B-plus rating, which is an extremely high rating, and it's an identical rating to countries like Germany and England have got. So we're also whitelisted by the International Monetary Fund. I think that these associations would not give us those magnificent ratings if we really were anything of the many things that our Spanish neighbors say we are.
To a great degree, Gibraltar has done well economically despite the UK. Because we're small, and again, because we invested in education, and because we're in the EU, all the issues that 15 years ago were presented as problems, OECD, IMF controls, tax regulation, all those things, that even here were seen as problems when they started, actually have been good for us. It's almost really a bit like somebody saying to you, you've got to lose weight, you've got to go on a diet. When you actually do it, you come out better. Margaret Thatcher closed the military base and said, your future is tourism and financial services. And that's what we did. It's not something we invented, it was a British invention. Don't forget again, who invented the finance center? Who invented Gibraltar, the Cayman Islands, Jersey, Guernsey, all the key places, Hong Kong? It was the British. I mean, they can't be against it because London is still one of the biggest. It's the mother of all finance centers. You know, I think if people are paying their tax, it's a proper legitimate business, if it's properly run, if it meets all the international standards, that's what it is.
The Self-Determination for Gibraltar Group is a group that started in Gibraltar many years ago, over 20 years ago now, and it is a group that came about as a result of local Gibraltarian persons being worried that the rights of the Gibraltarians were perhaps not being respected. One has to see the context of the time that in which this happened. It was at a time when England and Spain were being told by the United Nations that they had to resolve the issue of Gibraltar bilaterally as between themselves, and there was therefore a sentiment amongst the people of Gibraltar that our wishes, our aspirations, and indeed our rights as a people were not being taken into consideration. We feel that with the constitution that Gibraltar adopted in 2006, Gibraltar has achieved a level of self-government as ought not to be a colony. The United Nations, however, has not decolonized us yet. The Committee of 24 and the Fourth Committee continue to consider Gibraltar a colony, and they continue to consider our issue twice a year, every year. And we have, in fact, said to them 6 years ago now that if our constitution does not do enough, if they feel that there is something more that we need to do in order to be able to be decolonized, please tell us, and we will try our utmost to do whatever it is you ask of us.
I think democracy, you know, is the most important factor, and the assertion of self-determination should be unnecessary. But the reality of our life is that it's not. I think that, you know, you shouldn't have to tell the world that you have a basic human right. You should have it. But if someone is trying to take that from you, then it becomes important to assert it. And in that respect, I think you can argue that an assertion of self-determination does not have to amount to a call for independence. It just needs to be that someone respects what you said.
We have not even been able to explore what the tailor-made solution for Gibraltar might be, because the Spanish government says that we don't have a right to choose because we're not even a people, and because the United Nations says that the issue of Gibraltar's decolonization has to be bilaterally agreed between the UK and Spain. And because of that, the people of Gibraltar have never really been given a say. Over the years, what we have done is carry out several referenda, but they have not been on what we wish to be going forward, but simply on whether we wanted to retain certain sovereignty links with the UK. And the people of Gibraltar, on the two occasions that we have had those referenda, have voted overwhelmingly in favour of remaining British and remaining and not having any joint sovereignty with Spain.
Macaque monkeys are the actual owners of Gibraltar, those who have held sovereignty since time immemorial. Not even incursions by the Moors, the Spanish or the British, nor their conflicts have managed to get rid of them. It's been a steady and lasting domination which observes the political dispute from upon high, inaccessible chasms. In 1942, Winston Churchill, the British Prime Minister, fearing that they would become extinct, asked for more specimens to be brought from Morocco. His decision was influenced by the popular legend that is still quoted everywhere on the rock. As long as the macaques live there, Gibraltar will remain a British colony.
We are a colony, that's the problem. what we like to be is, I think, the more pertinent question. We have not even been allowed to conduct a referendum or a consultation of the type that would allow the people of Gibraltar to actually say what they want to be. England and Spain continue to have a political dispute vis-a-vis Gibraltar. Unfortunately, not always have the wishes of the people of Gibraltar been taken into consideration in that dispute.
Britain has learnt one lesson, that we might be very small, but just as Spain sees us as a stone in their shoe, we can be a little rock in the British shoe as well. It's best to leave us alone.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.